2018 is here, and what does it mean for podcasting? We also discuss audio files and how they are handled on Spreaker. PodFest Orlando is coming February 8th through the 10th, and we got a listener audio comment. Well, welcome to the Spreaker Live Show. This is episode 141 for January 3rd, 2018. I certainly appreciate you joining me on the Spreaker Live Show again. We are in a new year. It's exciting. It's 2018. And so this is the first episode of the new year. So I'm excited. My name is Rob Greenlee, and I am the head of partnerships at Spreaker. And I certainly appreciate you downloading us or just listening to us out there. In our apps, our listening platform that Spreaker has, in iTunes and a bunch of different places out there. But I'm joined again by my co-host, Mr. Alex Exum, who's the host of the Exum Experience podcast on Spreaker. Alex, it's great to have you back. I know you're gone for like 2 or 3 weeks. It was amazing to do this show without you for that long. So we'll have to get reacquainted again.
That's funny. Yeah, I think it just felt like 3 months. I was saying this earlier. Yeah, it seems like a long time. So I'm glad to be back. It's like, I don't know. It just seemed like a long time. And I don't like having breaks, Rob, especially podcasting. It doesn't keep me – I like to keep sharp and fresh.
Yeah,
so
exactly,
this
yeah.
show keeps me on the ball. And during the holidays, I tend to slack a little. So,
well, I did 2 of the episodes solo. So I didn't
co-host.
Yeah. So it was a little bit of a different twist on the show. I'm not sure I was as happy with the most with last week's show, but I thought that the 2 before that were okay. So
I thought you did a great job solo, Rob. I know sometimes you say you don't like doing the solo shows, but I thought you did a fantastic job. It's different, right? It's weird when you have a co-host and all of a sudden you fly solo. It can be or even have a different host. It can be a little weird. So not weird in a bad way, but, you know, yeah, just different.
Yeah, I mean, so did you do your show during the break at all, or did you take a break from that too?
I didn't, not when I was gone, no. When I was away, I didn't. I mean, I didn't have my microphone. I could have through the Spreaker app on my phone because there was a few kind of things in the media, you know, hot button issues that I did do shows on when I got back. Yeah. So I've done, I did a show about this swatting incident. This kid out in LA got arrested for, you know, and a few others, two shows. But that's about it. My experience traveling with someone who had a therapy cat. I'm not kidding, Rob, on the plane. And
every
I've seen
cat
dogs.
Is a therapy cat, isn't it? Isn't
but a grown man cat? with the cat. I mean, come on, you can't get on the take a Xanax for God's sakes. Anyway, then I did another show about this whole swatting incident that you probably heard of is in the news, and that's it. I really don't. When I'm away, I kind of check out for a while, and
sure,
yeah. Yeah, I use my vacation the way it was intended. I don't work. I don't podcast.
That's true. I didn't really do that. Holidays are usually not much of a vacation for me. There's always so much to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it'd be nice if it actually was a true vacation.
Not that podcasting's work. I don't want to make it sound like, oh God, I got to sludge through another podcast with Rob or do my Exum experience. What the hell am I doing here? No, it's sometimes you just need to decompress. And I do like internet breaks. Sometimes I'll just take a day or two or an entire weekend, a Saturday and Sunday, not go on the internet. It's really hard, but it can be done just to decompress, right? It's just like meditating.
I was just thinking about that, you know, this morning. It was like, you know, I really haven't had much of a break. It's just been one thing after another. I did the new media show was going as normal through the holiday too. And I did, you know, some other shows and things like that. So it was really, really a busy time for me. And I know a lot of people out there will tell you that it's actually better for your audience development to do a lot of shows during holiday breaks because people have extra time to listen. But I don't know if that's necessarily the case all the time, you know, as far as people have all this free time and new devices. So let's say people get new computers or they get new phones or whatever, and they're getting them all set up and those kind of things, that it's an opportunity to grow your audience, right? I didn't necessarily see that in my numbers. So I think we do better with this show during just regular, you know, normal work weeks. And it could be just the topic of this show too.
Well, I tend to agree with you. The last two shows I did weren't my highest numbers, right? And I agree with you. It seems like every Christmas, the holiday season, it happens. Not so much Thanksgiving, but around Christmas, New Year's. And part of it, I think, Rob, is because look at every single Fox, MSNBC, any talk shows that you listen to. They always have the B team on, right? It's like anybody who's been on all year, they usually have that week or 2 weeks off for vacation. Yeah. And so they have the backup team and everything. So people kind of check out. The ratings usually slump. People are, you know, maybe drinking too much and going to parties and things like that.
Right.
So, I mean, I don't know. Like, I know that we've said this on this very show, and we've looked at, you know, articles or numbers and said, hey, yeah, maybe it helps to constantly, like you said, stay fresh during the holidays. I don't see that reflected in my numbers. My numbers always slump during Christmas, even if I'm active. Yeah. And there's been some years where I just kept going. I plugged right through. So,
anyway. Well, I just think that a lot of people are distracted. I mean, I just look at my own life and how, you know, there's all these family things going on, and there's the shopping, and there's the going to, you know, family stuff. It just, or friends or whatever. It just takes up a lot of time, and you just don't have a lot of time to actually listen to podcasts. During the work week, people are commuting and people are going in through their normal routines. And I just think people have more time. So,
I agree.
So it may make more sense to take more time off during the holiday time frames for your podcasting.
Well, so, I'll give you one worse, Rob. I hate to even admit it, but I'll admit it to you and the listeners here because we're all friends here. I almost did kind of a year-end review, like a best-of show, just kind of trying to phone it in. Like, I'll slap some clips together, right, and just plug through this thing. And maybe do a quick five-minute intro and just, oh, these are the top stories that I did. And I said, that's just cheating. It's just cheating. It's like, you know what I mean? I felt like I was just doing it to have a show in queue, like, because I've been gone for a while. And I'm like, but that's just that. Not even cheating. It's just – it's sloppy work. It's uncreative. It's like, you know, when you see the sitcoms and they do like, let's slap a bunch of, you know, a vignette of a bunch of different episodes together because we don't have writers to, you know, during the writer's strike or something like that, you know, and I just felt like it was a cop out. So I didn't even do it.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, you know, some people like to get their show fixes too. I mean, I can see it from a loyal listener perspective that getting something is better than nothing, right? It just depends on, but I think that's a fairly small part of your audience typically to your show that has that, you know, need to have that fix, right, of getting that episode. But that's something that you have to choose as a podcaster if that's something I think most of your audience will understand if you want to take that holiday off. And because they're probably doing similar things in their lives. They're taking time off of work and focusing on other things to get through the holidays. Because, you know, for a lot of people, the holidays can be a fairly stressful time. You know, there's a lot of stuff going on. Maybe family members that they don't necessarily want to see, so they're maybe not always in the best of moods. So anyway,
It's an easy time. It's an easy time to pod fade, right? Because you, like you said, you get distracted, or you might get depressed. A lot of people get depressed during the holidays, and for whatever reason, you just don't feel like turning the mic on. And you know, 1 month turns into, you know, December turns into January, and next thing you know, I'd like to see the numbers, Rob. We should find that out. What is the month that most people pod fade?
That's an interesting. I don't know. It would take some serious.
We should know some silly statistic like that. Exactly. We should know that.
Yeah. So, I was just going to mention here too that we stream this show live every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, and you can get that at SpreakerLiveShow.com. And you can get this show on all the major podcast listening platforms, you know, even the Amazon Echo, the Alexa platform. I'll say that quickly. Hopefully it won't activate your smart speaker on your desk, but you can get the show there just by asking for us. And we have our own apps too, the Spreaker Live Show apps for iOS and Android, so you can get us there as well. And you know, Stitcher and Overcast and all those are popular places to get the show as well. So yeah, I always like to share that with the audience because, you know, there's new people that come in and listen to the show and they may not know about these other places that they can get us. So especially on the smart speakers. I mean, that's kind of a new thing. There's a lot of people that are really excited and hot about, especially on the kind of the radio industry side, about the future of these smart speakers. And I know we've talked about it extensively on this show. and I have on my other show that I do too. And the listenership numbers are not really that spectacular yet, but I think people are really focused on the opportunity of it and where it might go in the future. So that's why Spreaker supports, you know, these platforms, and we try and, you know, it's hard to know exactly where the big hits are going to come from. I know there's other people, and we can just dive into the topic that we have this week, is 2018 and podcasting. You know, what might be next as you look out over the next year for podcasting? Where are the growth trends going to happen? Where's the opportunities? And that's kind of what I wanted to spend a little bit of time talking about, Alex, is where you see those things. And I can share some thoughts that I have. I know a lot of people are optimistic about these smart speakers and these smart agent technologies. I'm talking about Cortana and these platforms are getting more connected with big data. They're getting more connected with audio. It's an audio platform, so it seems like podcasting fits there. But the listenership of those platforms is not, it's not growing at a huge rate, or it's not a significant factor. But many feel that as this technology gets integrated into more devices, into more places in the car, on your mobile phone, and various places in the home, that it will become a bigger and bigger factor over the subsequent years that are coming. So I think, and then people are also very optimistic about places like Spotify and other newer kind of music platforms that are getting more engaged in podcasting and talking about Google and the opportunities that Google is looking at. They've been, you know, and I think I've mentioned this on the show before as well, that they have a team that's focused on doing deep research on podcasting right now to come up with a better service than Google Play Podcasts. So we may see something happen in the next year. I would say 2018 is probably when Google is going to make a move in this and really start having an impact in the podcasting space that they haven't had yet with the Google Play platform. So that's kind of a nutshell where I'm thinking. Alex, what's your thoughts on this? I mean, what direction would you like to see 2018 go?
Well, I know we're going to talk about YouTube later, but I will bring it up just briefly here, because I don't want to kind of steal the thunder of the comment that we're going to get. But I've always said, you know, aside from YouTube, there's no real podcasting platform where you can just upload it and it's basically free type thing. And that has like kind of a robust social media type, you know, commenting system where people are pretty active and stuff. So once that happens, it's going to be tough for, let's be honest, the Spreakers of the world to compete, right? Because if it's free, a lot of people will go there. The only problem I think is that they don't, you know, they don't really have it. I mean, Google Play, you know, you mentioned that whole podcasting debacle, which didn't really work. There's like Mixcloud, which kind of offers a free option, right, where you can just upload it for free. But it doesn't have all the bells and whistles. You don't get the Spreaker Studio. There's a lot you don't get, right, Rob?
Yeah.
You can't push it out to iHeartRadio. So there's no like free option where it's just unlimited yet. But that's where I thought they were going, right? And I'm like, well, how are they going to use it? Is it going to take away from YouTube? Maybe not. You know, maybe it's just going to be a separate thing that's strictly for audio, one strictly for video, but it's kind of an unlimited type thing where you can monetize it possibly. That is where it gets a little sketchy, because podcasting can be even more inflammatory than some videos, right? I mean, people really speak their mind in podcasts. So it gets tricky. In 2018, I think that there will be a service like that. I don't know if it will be Google or YouTube or any, you know, but someone's going to come up with that kind of model. But I just don't know if it'll work without all of the other, because it's expensive to pay for all that, right? The hosting. So where are you going to get the money from? Where's the money going to come from, Rob? So it's got to come from advertising.
I mean, it's going to be done from a big company that's got deep resources, and they're going to try and monetize it.
Shut
it. Advertising, right?
Right. Exactly. And but that's where you get into the whole thing of, you know, what can be monetized, and are advertisers going to run from content? So it gets weird. You know what I mean? Because YouTube had the whole thing where they demonetize a lot of people because of the advertisers. So I don't know. I don't see how you can have an unlimited plan if you don't have the advertisers, right?
Yeah,
so people actually have to pay. And what I like is, if you're paying for it, if you're paying for a service, who's going to turn you off? Right? The company who you're paying is not going to turn you off. So there's no real authority that, like, the FCC can't come in and say, I don't like what you're saying, I'm going to shut down your show. So that's the other thing about paying for your own type of hosting and not leaving it up to a YouTube who can arbitrarily just shut you down for any reason.
You've hit a core point here on why podcasting is so different than what's happening on the places like YouTube is that it is a platform that the content creator is in a fair amount more control of their destiny, I think, is a big part of it as well. I think most people, podcasters, think of YouTube as just a place to potentially distribute your show, but it's not the end-all distribution point, right? There's, you know, places like Spreaker and other hosting platforms that give you access to distribute in many different places, and that gives you as a podcaster a lot more power because you can go direct to your listeners too. You just, you know, post a little player on your, you know, have a WordPress blog and just post a link there, and you don't even have to use a hosting platform, really. I mean, I started out doing my show many years ago. I didn't have a hosting platform that, I mean, I obviously had a website, but I didn't have a specific, you know, like podcast hosting service that I worked with because I had to build my own servers back then. But that's how open and free this medium is. Unlike if you put all your eggs into the YouTube basket, you're basically, you know, under the thumb of Google. And that's your distribution, your monetization, your publishing, everything is there, right? So you're in less control of your destiny. So that's what podcasting has really been all about since day one when it started back in 2004 is an independent platform for distributing your content that isn't controlled by a lot of other people or big companies. I think we are getting into a phase where bigger companies are having more and more authority in this medium, but that's happening because of monetization. Alex, you know, I'll let you talk now too. I've been talking too long.
No, I was going to say the one thing that drew. No, that's great. The one thing that drew me to Spreaker initially was, and I don't know if you remember this, Rob. It was kind of like early, like I call it the early days of Spreaker, but you've been there longer than me, right? But when I first got on, it was more like kind of like the rebellious kind of like, you know, voice in the wild was kind of the marketing and advertising. It's changed a little bit over the years. But I remember it was like, oh, like I like this kind of independent kind of like, you know, pump up the volume, Christian Slater, you know, type thing. I really liked that aspect. I was like, yeah, this is the company for me. And also because of the app, I initially started my show on the phone. But I just liked kind of the advertising, the marketing. I said, you know, I like the fact that I can't be shut down. And like you were saying, you know, Google has the authority on whether, you know, I can monetize it, even if they want to just shut the channel down and kill your entire show. Where does all your content go? And by the way, you can back that up. And we could talk about that later, about backing up your YouTube channel. But yeah, I have an axe to grind with YouTube. I don't want to keep saying, I know we're going to talk about it later, so I don't want to keep talking about YouTube. But there's other platforms too that I'm not like a huge fan of, like some of them that you pay for, right? You're paying for the service. And they can not even shut you down. It's in the terms of service. Basically, you're only paying for it for a certain amount of time. And if you stop, the show goes bye-bye. Like the archive's gone type thing. And I'm like, whoa, wait a second. I don't, you know. Some of it's – and it's like on a monthly basis type thing. So I don't know. Like if you skip a month, is it gone and you'll never see it again? It's kind of scary. Rob, hosting like audio like you were saying and like the olden days, hosting video and stuff on your website, like maybe back in the day that was like viable. But now it's just like with hacking and all this stuff, it's like not even worth it. Let somebody else do it. You know what I mean? Like let somebody else host your video and your audio. And if you have to pay, you have to pay because doing that is so tricky. And it's like not even tricky. It usually doesn't work. It's clunky. I would much rather pay for a service personally.
Well, back when I started doing all this back in 1998, 99, I had to get my own servers. And it was basically a server under a guy's desk in an office. That's how I started doing this. I mean, it and then as I grow, I moved my show into multiple servers and co-location facilities. And I had to manage those things. And one of the big reasons over the years that I shut it down, I took my servers out of the co-location. It wasn't necessarily because of the cost, because I was getting a pretty good deal on stuff that I was doing. It was more like you just mentioned. It was more about the security stuff. It was my servers started getting hacked, and I was basically, you know, I wasn't a IT expert or security expert on servers, and I never have been. And so I was battling these hackers that were coming in and, you know, turning my servers into zombies, trying to beat them back. And it just got too much. I mean, I just couldn't keep going down to the colocation facility and spending hours in there trying to dismantle these hacker codes in our servers. I mean, eventually I just pulled them out of there and started working with hosting stuff in the cloud. You know, back in those days, it was really just a bunch of shared servers, but they were starting to play around with that term, you know, the cloud, right? Which is what we see now. Most of the large companies are built on, you know, server farms of thousands of servers. Back in the early days of this medium, most of these companies were built on maybe 5 to 10 or 15 servers that were dedicated just to that company. And then if you wanted to grow your volume, you had to add more servers. You know, you had to physically go out and buy them, and you had to install them into your server rack and pay extra money. Now, you know, people scale up and down just by adding virtual servers, right? People, you know, that's what Amazon does. That's what Microsoft is into. Actually, one of the biggest revenues of Microsoft right now is Azure, which is basically tens of thousands of blade servers that are in huge warehouses all over the world. And that's how things have changed now. You know, podcasting when I started was, you know, it was a stick it to the man medium. It was, you know, we were rogue. It was kind of like, you know, pirate radio, right? That concept.
Yeah.
I mean, it was very much that in the beginning, and a lot of the culture around it was, we're going to kill radio and we're going to stick it to the man, and nobody's going to tell us what to do, and we're not going to run advertising, we're not going to be commercial. All that stuff was really kind of looked down upon back when this medium started. And now you look at in 2018, it's like, it's a badge of honor to have advertising in your show now. I mean, that's how far things have changed when it comes to that.
Yeah, and that's one problem, I think, for show, not this show, the Speaker Live show, but my other show, the XM Experience, where I run into, it's a little dicey, right? So if you're doing a show strictly to make money, having controversial topics or speakers and guests and things, it's not going to be in your favor. It's just not. It's yeah. not. And even that goes into YouTube and all the other platforms. But at the same time, sometimes you'll get numbers because it's controversial. So it's kind of a double-edged sword. Like you can get a lot of numbers because it's a hot button issue. For example, if you're talking about immigration right now, right? Or things like building the wall and things like that. Yeah. A lot of people will listen to it, but they might not agree with you, and advertisers might shy away from it. So it's a double-edged sword. I always like to sprinkle the controversial amongst the mundane, right? So you have a smattering of samples that you can send to advertisers or people who might potentially listen to it. You know, you run the whole gamut. So you don't have to really change the your morals or your show. So you're not changing the theme of the show, right? But it's a little more palatable to advertisers so they can hear something that's a little more bubblegum instead of talking about something that's going to turn them off. But
yeah,
that's just me. Yeah, advertising to me in the beginning, Rob, wasn't the idea. So when I started, like, I kind of went on a weird trajectory. Like, I wasn't controversial, then I went controversial. They said, well, I want advertisers. And then once I started trying to curb my show, I felt like it wasn't authentic. Like, it wasn't me anymore. So I just had to kind of go back to the original Wild Man show that I do.
Well, I mean, here. It really depends on what your motivations are for doing a show. I mean, if your goals for doing a show is to earn a living doing it, then that takes you down a very distinct and different path than if you're just doing a show because you want to express yourself and have an opinion and be part of the conversation out there and maybe somehow in a small way change the world and change how people think. Those are very different priorities and motivations for doing this. And they can have a varying degree of motivation over the long run too, whether or not you continue. You know, I think that's why I keep saying you got to get into this with some sort of a goal in mind. I mean, you have to think about, well, you know, what drives you is doing a podcast? Does that fit in with what your motivations are? And if only your motivation is to just earn money from it, you know, I think it's going to be a tough slog. It's going to be hard because it's hard every week to put that outline together. If the only motivation is to make money.
And that's every single podcast that's practically coming out now. And it's always a business guru podcast where we interview people that, you know, have been successful in small business or marketing and blah, blah. They built a company from scratch, right? There are 1,000 of these podcasts and you can tell they're all kind of doing the same thing, hoping to make money because they know a guy did once and they're all kind of following the same format. And they're practically unlistenable, Rob. And it's the same guests on all these shows too, I noticed. Yeah. They just do the rounds of podcasts. They got a book that came out or an ebook or something like that. So they do the rounds on all the podcast, but it's just like they all sound the same. And I just want to hear what's new, Rob. What's the new sound for 2018? That's what I want to know. Like, what's going to be the new podcast? Not this serial stuff or this, like, you know, true life crime thing that everybody's doing. There's so many of these same things. It's like one of them was a hit, so now everybody's kind of trying to emulate that. But what's going to be the new, like, niche? Like, what's going to be the new big 2018 podcast? I don't know.
Ryan. I don't know that there is going to be a big new genre in this medium. I think it's just a continuation of, you know, I think some of the things that I saw at PodCon may be a little bit of a clue of something that may be bubbling out there. And that's younger people getting involved in this medium, which hasn't been the case too much up until now. And maybe that's going to create a new genre of stuff. And I've seen that. I mean, I was partnered with a podcast network called HeadGum, and it was definitely a network of content that was focused on being very genuine and real and very talking about topics that have been kind of taboo, you know, but the younger generation likes to do those kinds of things. They like to break the stereotypical, you know, culture mold that's out there and do their own thing and be rebels, right? And that's what it's all about.
Yeah. I think podcasting needs that because it's becoming too formulaematic. Formulamatic? Yeah. I guess I think that's right. Sounds right to me. It's like we're getting a formula here for all these podcasters and they're all doing the kind of the same thing. And Rob, you mentioned the podcasting conference? PodCon. You mentioned PodCon, and I'm just looking at, because I know you were going to mention, maybe this is a good segue, about the Orlando Festival, the PodFest. Well, I went there because you mentioned we're going to talk about it, so I'm looking and I'm like, you know, haven't heard a whole lot about this one. And I look, and nothing against them, I'm sure it's great, but it literally, it's all the same people that I saw at PodFest. Podcast Movement. Looking at PodFest. Podcast Movement. And I love Podcast Movement. It's great. But I'm just saying, it's like I'm seeing the exact same speakers, all the same faces and everything. So I'm like, is this just going to be a bigger or smaller? I haven't looked at the numbers. But here, another face that I don't even remember her name, but I met her at Pod. So I'm just looking at the pictures they're flashing through. And I'm like, I don't know. Is this it? Like, is this 2018? It's going to be the same speakers for 2018 PodFest as Podcast Movement 2018, which I think is in Philly. All the same people, all giving us the same information. I'm not trying to rant, you know. I'm sure this is a great festival, Rob. But like, I'm seeing all the same faces. Jackson, of course, there, my nemesis. I see him flash up, of course. What's her name from? I think she's from Libsyn. She got an award. She's sweet as pie. She's like really cute. Ilse, thank you. Yeah, so I see her, you know, thank you, Escobar. I see a lot of the same people and everything. So it's like, okay, there's nothing wrong with that. I like a lot of these people, but it's just kind of like, where's the new fresh blood? Where's the new rock stars of podcasting?
That's what we saw at PodCon. I think that was the big thing that we saw at PodCon. It was a completely different set of speakers. It's the younger generation that's getting involved in this medium. And so we are seeing that kind of breakthrough that's happening. And PodCon, go to podcon.com.
I'm there now, yeah. That was in Seattle, I forgot.
Yeah, correct. Yeah, it was in downtown Seattle. I had a booth there, so both.
See, Seattle's edgy. Seattle's good for that. You know, it's kind of got like a rebellious spirit, Seattle, in my opinion.
Well, it's from the grunge era, right?
Yeah, Nirvana. Yeah.
Nirvana and all that.
That's my era. I loved that music, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, that event was very much a glimpse of the new generation that's coming. And that generation is really focused on storytelling and being authentic. But they're also very much focused on fantasy, too. So creating shows that are about fantasy characters and kind of like Comic-Con, right? Very much comic book type of orientation towards literary works and creativity. And
that's interesting.
Actually really experiencing the characters. They came to this event in costumes of the characters in the podcasts that they were fans of. They could actually, these shows were doing episodes at PodCon, but yet there was a conference too. So you had kind of the professional side and there was a lot of people there, the younger people that were inspired to get together and to create, you know, like one of the people that would get together would be like a storyteller writer. And then the other ones would be like aspiring actors and actresses that wanted to play out various parts. So very much of a kind of a fantasy thing, but it was very kind of, I was more of an independent production, not a fancy big company type of audio drama, that kind of thing. So, which is, you're also seeing a lot of that happen these days too, but it was very much grassroots and very much what the fabric of podcasting has been built on is organic inspiration. Creativity by normal people. And it just so happens that these are teens and early 20s folks that are doing this. And that community has not really been part of podcasting until now, not that we've seen. So it's really a refreshing sign to see that.
Yeah, you mentioned actors. I've always wondered why there aren't more actors and acting troupes doing podcasting, because it's such a, you know what I mean? There's so much.
Well, I think it's happening.
Opportunity.
I mean,
yeah.
There's more of them getting involved in it. You know, there's more SAG involvement in podcasting too down in LA. I know of a bunch of different productions that are going on down there, and I think we're going to see more of them in 2018 where SAG actors get involved in doing Foley productions. And that's that term may be unknown to some of the listeners in here, but that's like audio dramas, essentially, you know, like the War of the Worlds kind of thing, where they're actually creating sound effects and kind of deep three-dimensional sound experiences as part of the storytelling. So I think we're going to see a lot more of that come out of Hollywood here over the next year or two.
Yeah, I don't know if I want the unions to get involved in podcasting, then where y'all start paying union dues.
Well, I mean, it's already happening to some degree, and I think SAG has a or they're working on a new designation, I think, for audio drama. So, is what I heard.
It was only a matter of time, I guess, before they got involved.
Yeah, because it's cool now. It's cool now to do a podcast, and more people in Hollywood are starting to see the opportunity. I think we're going to see a lot more podcasts done in support of movies and TV shows, and then podcasts that get converted into TV shows is going to happen more and more as well. That's been going on for many years now, actually, especially on the comedy side, you know, like the Marc Maron show and that kind of stuff has been, you know, that's being done fairly regularly. But I think we're starting to see it happen more and more with the storytelling stuff now, which is a little bit new.
Like, yeah, well, look at all the celebrities who have gone to podcasting after their careers implode, or
yeah, they get exactly. Off television. Well, I mean, it is. I mean, there's a little bit of that too. I mean, even with the big journalists that got drummed out because of sexual harassment issues, you know, where do they go? They go to podcasting.
Yeah, first thing they all did. Let's start a podcast. Exactly.
Great for podcasting. It's like, well, we get all of the
riffraff,
bad folks. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but to be honest with you, go listen to some. They're terrible at podcasting. They've been doing television too long, or they did radio once. So I should be good at podcasting, and I'm not impressed by some of them. I got to be honest.
Yeah. Well, anyway, let's jump ahead here and talk a little bit about audiophiles on the Spreaker platform, because mm-hmm. there's been some questions that have come up from various. People that use Spreaker to distribute their shows, with some concern that Spreaker is re-encoding their audio files and They don't like the way they sound. It's a much more complicated story, isn't it, Alex? So I know you dove into this too, and I can explain a little bit too, but I know you have had a little bit of experience. So let's start with your story first, and then we can kind of pull this thing apart a little bit more.
Yeah, so when I first got started, I was obsessed with audio quality, and I went through all sorts of different, let's just say, permutations of trying to get the perfect audio file, right, Rob? And I knew that, you know, it's going to be re-encoded, and then I found out what Spreaker does with it, and so why even worry too much about having it in a WAVE file, which we all know is a massive file, right?
Yeah, I wouldn't do that, actually. Yeah.
Yeah, not a good idea. And then there's stereo and mono. Well, that's going to increase the file size as well. And then you get into the whole thing. Well, Spreaker's going to use stereo. Does it matter if I record it in mono and upload it in mono? So anyway, you're getting all this crap, right? Here's what I found. And this is what I think is the most important thing, because people think, well, I don't know if the audio quality is going to be good, because some other companies, this is pretty much the standard 128, right, Rob? Kilobytes per second. That's pretty much the standard. I mean, I know that some people like the Spotify's and Pandora's of the world will stream music at a higher rate, and they call it a high quality audio.
I think it's like 196 or 256 or
196 is pretty standard. Yeah. And then, right. And then for the premium, they usually go up to like 320 in some instances. Yeah. Right. And then there's, what's the new one? Tidal, where it's like, I think it's even higher. I don't even know, but here's...
It's called, yeah, I think it's called lossless is what they call it.
Lossless. Okay. So, you know, basically, you know, but better than crazy. CD quality.
That's like WAV file streaming, you know.
Right. What's the point? And it doesn't sound that much better. Now, here's the important thing. And I did a show on this years ago. I'm looking here. Well, wow. September the 17th, 2013. That's how long ago. And it was 192 versus 320. Yeah. You know, what is the best bit rate? And then I went through this whole thing, and then I listened to samples. I did this whole show about it, and then I went to the experts. And I chose – and we're talking about 192, right? Mm-hmm. We're not talking about Spreaker's 128. But what I'm getting at is I was choosing, and so were the audio professionals or audiophiles. They were choosing 192 over the 320. So you're saying, well, why would that be? How can that be? I don't know. I couldn't figure it out. Some of these guys couldn't figure it out for whatever reason. Maybe we're used to it. Maybe because we're so used to MP3s, whatever. But we thought that the best audio quality was the 192. So then you get to the 120 numbers here. Everyone's blurring. 128. I can't tell the difference between 128 and 192.
Yeah, so, you can. I mean, most
you
people
can't.
Don't have the speakers and the audio equipment to take advantage of the audio depth at those higher bit rates. It just,
right. If you plug in your earbuds with your phone or even your laptop, you're not going to notice it. Now, if you have a high-end system with high-end monitors or high-end, I'm not talking about like, you know, regular headphones, but, you know, over the ear, you know, $300 headphones, not Beats, right? But like audio tech, DJ headphones or studio quality headphones, you may hear it, but not much. And it's not really worth the bandwidth. It's not worth the size. It's not worth making your listeners download a file 2, 3, 10 times the size. And if you're right, and if you're uploading it as a WAV file, Rob, what's the point? The people on the other end are only going to get what they're going to get. So it doesn't matter what you upload. It's going to get converted in Spreaker, and you're going to get stereo 128. So anyway, I hope people aren't bored by these numbers, but some people are always concerned about, well, I want my show to sound just as good as everybody else's, or the radio, right?
Music, right? I mean, I think that the big thing that you need to really think about here is that most of the content that we're talking about here is spoken word. And unless you're getting involved in music and things like that, which we kind of discourage on the platform, really, it's not going to sound any different. I mean, really, 96K, 64K is perfectly acceptable audio quality for spoken word content. I mean, it just is. And I'll tell you, if you have a really big show, if you're doing, you know, 400,000 downloads of your show, encoding your file, I mean, oftentimes those shows will have to pay for their bandwidth too. encoding their show at between 64 and 128K can be thousands of dollars in your out of your pocket difference. So there's two ways that are going on. I'm not saying that's the case for the podcasters on Spreaker, because we're covering all that. But once you start getting up into those higher levels of being a content creator, and I faced this when I worked at Podcast One, because we had shows that are in there that were doing 500,000 or 600,000 downloads an episode, and having an audio file that's 64K is a huge cost reduction from having an episode that's encoded at 128K if you're paying for bandwidth. So that's the other side to this equation. And if you were to listen to a 96K, a properly recorded, see, it's also a factor of quality in, quality out too. So you can have a really bad recording and you can put it out there as 128K. It'll still sound like a bad recording. I mean, just because you have a higher bit rate doesn't make the audio quality always better. So that's the other side to it too. If you're recording in high quality equipment, you can put it out as a 64K file and it'll sound terrific. So it's all a matter of scale, and we've chosen the 128K because that's like we're perceiving it as kind of a high end solution here, not a middle of the road solution, because we're not doing music typically. And 96K could have been just as good of a choice here as 128K, but we've chosen a little bit higher on this spectrum. But if you upload directly to Spreaker, you can encode it whatever you want. It can be encoded at 64K if you upload it directly to Spreaker, or do a feed, like a feed import. So if you drop your feed into the importer tool, it'll grab all the media files in there. We're not going to re-encode all those media files. They're just going to drop on the server as they are. But if you're going to record through the Spreaker Studio software, it's going to be 128K is what the recording is going to be. But if you upload any other file other than an MP3, we're going to convert it. Like if you upload a WAV file, or you upload a AIF file, or you upload like an MP4 file or something like that, we're going to make it 128K stereo at 44.1 megahertz. And the reason that we do that primarily is so we have some standardization on the platform for the streaming that we do to our website and apps. We always use a re-encoded file that is used for that. But if you upload directly, we typically will just keep it as the original file. But if you listen to it on various places, so if you listen to it in like the iPhone or the iPad or anything like that, you're going to listen to a re-encoded file that's for complicated reasons. It actually relates to the ID3 tags that are embedded in those files. But you're going to listen to a different file than you were going to listen to when you listen to it off of the Spreaker website. That's where people kind of get a little confused about what's happening. I think what we're going to do over time, though, is we're going to standardize this and really simplify it. Because if you look at some of our competitive platforms out there, they're basically much more open to this. They don't do a lot of re-encoding because they rely on the content provider to just upload whatever their file is to the platform. I mean, a lot of them don't allow for recording or anything like that, too. So you just upload it, and whatever it is, it gets distributed as it is. So I would tend to want to be a little closer to that than I think what we're doing a little bit. Trying to support other file types complicates things too. And most podcasters should be doing their show as MP3 files anyway. You shouldn't be doing your show as a WAV file and then trying to publish that. Right, Alex?
Yeah, and now here's the real kick in the pants, since we've gone through all of that and gotten everyone all confused.
Yeah, here's the real... It's confusing, and I'm trying to sort it out with the Spreaker team. We're trying to work through this so we can make it much more simple for people to understand what's going on here. There's various technical reasons why we've historically done things in a certain way, and then what we have to do is we just have to kind of migrate this and simplify it to what's more acceptable in the long run. But But Alex, go ahead.
Well, no, I was just going to say the real kick in the pants at the end of the whole day. Like when you think about this whole thing, you get through it and you go, okay, wait a second. Like, so what is Rob saying? What is Alex really saying here? Here's what I'll end with here. Not that we have to end it, but this is what I'll say. If finally, everything you're listening to is compressed. Everything. I don't care what streaming service. I don't care if it's YouTube. I don't care if it's everything. If you use Sling TV or Hulu or Netflix, everything's compressed, whether it's the picture or the audio. So nobody, Rob, is listening to uncompressed audio because I've gotten into this. I don't want to say I've gotten into this debate, but I've heard this debated before. MP3 sucks. We should move away from MP3 and use whatever you want to use. Wave, Org, Orbis, whatever. I can never say it right.
That's not practical.
Nope, I agree. Yeah. Right. It's like, you know, it's like saying all of a sudden everybody's going to switch from, digital to analog again or something. Yeah. I don't know. It's just not going to happen. We're not going backwards. MP3's here. We're stuck with it. But everything we listen to is pretty much compressed. All the audio. I mean, people who go and listen, do you know how bad most people listen to a lot of their audio now and find new music on YouTube, believe it or not? Do you know how bad that audio is on a lot of those videos? Yeah. I mean, it's terrible audio quality. And then even the Pandoras and the Spotifys and everything, they'll say, oh, if you get the premium, we'll stream at a higher rate. Most people don't do it, or they don't even turn it on most of the time, Rob, because you got to kind of flip that, toggle it in your settings. So most people are listening to compressed stuff all the time. Now, podcasters, rightfully so, want to sound their best. I get it. So we obsess about this whole thing. But I mean, you don't, there's not a whole lot of wiggle room, Rob, right? There's no service out there where you're going to get some audio quality that's just going to blow people away compared to the others. It's all going to sound pretty much the same, give or take.
Well, it is. And it really gets back to most people are listening to this stuff off of, their
phones,
cell phone speakers, or they're listening to little earbuds in their ear that have little tiny speakers on them. You know, you're not going to be able to get extremely high fidelity sound out of any of these platforms, and it's unrealistic to think that that's the experience that you're going to get for most people. I think people, I mean, there's a lot of music fans that are really kind of pissed off with what's happened with audio quality, because back when I was younger, it was cool to have a really expensive hi-fi stereo system that, you know, big expensive JBL speakers and all that stuff. And we're crazy hi-fi fanatics, and audio quality was important to us. But things have changed. Digital degraded audio quality. I hate to say it, but that's
reality. No, it's true. And if people want an example, they can go to hdtracks.com. You can get high definition. They call it high definition music, but they're very high files, right?
Yeah.
They're large files. But listen to some of those. They have a sample. You can sign up and get like a sample from their mailing list or whatever, so you don't have to pay. But you'll hear the difference even if you're using just regular headsets. It's not much, but you will hear it. But if you have a really nice system, it's really noticeable. I mean, Rob, I can listen to vinyl. I have a friend who's got a nice vinyl system, and I was like, wow. Like, just listening to vinyl sounds so much better than a lot of the crap I listen to on my computer.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, but you have to have the right equipment to have that experience.
No. Absolutely.
And most people just don't have that equipment. And it's crazy to even think that anybody's even playing around with, 320 size files. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. So that quality is not going to be transmitted into your ear in any device that we have in our homes today. So it's just not going to happen.
No, I agree.
So, but anyway, I probably muddied the water a little bit by trying to explain this. But hopefully a little bit got out, and we will, keep working on this to try and get it simpler. And I think where it makes more sense, and it's just easier for people to understand, because I think customers of the speaker platform get upset if they don't sound the way they want to sound on various devices, and they don't realize that depending on where you're listening, it can sound different. So that's an unfortunate technical reality right now that we need to work through. So, but anyway, I think that's probably enough of that. Alex, what do you think?
Yeah, and now that we've confused everyone totally.
Exactly. But if you have a question about it, feel free to send me a question, and we will we will talk about it on the next episode a little bit more, and maybe we can pull this apart. And I'm working with the Spreaker team to get a little more clarity on this too, so we can kind of take it in pieces, and then hopefully we can get the feedback going into them about what you want and what is better for us to support, whether it's not doing any re-encoding at all, or do we need to even be supporting all these other file types and trying to do re-encoding, and or do we just want to make it simple and say, if you want to publish a podcast, you got to encode an MP3 file and upload it to us, and we'll just deliver whatever you encode. So I'm all right with that as well. So instead of trying to control, but there is some risk there of giving all of the content creators all the keys to this, because they can shoot themselves in the foot too. So so we're trying to help as well. So your feedback is important on this. I mean, if you have an idea of how you would like to have it done, send it to me, rob@spreaker.com. I'm more than happy to hear from you. But I'm going to take my 14 years of experience doing audio shows and give that feedback back to the Spreaker team and work with them just based on my long standing experience of working with doing this stuff, and hopefully we can come up with a better solution here in the future. But anyway, let's talk about PodFest Orlando. It's coming up February 8th through the 10th. Spreaker is going to be there in a big way. We're going to have a booth down there. The whole Spreaker team and Block Talk Radio is going to be there as well. So that's going to be our kind of like company meeting get-together. It's going to be down at podfest.us/2018. So if you wanted to go check it out and see what's going on down there, and if you wanted to take a winter trip to Florida and hopefully get warm down there. I know with the recent weather storm that's going on, I know the northern Florida is getting ice storms and all sorts of stuff, which hopefully doesn't make it down to Orlando, Alex.
I don't blame you. I mean, I left when they got that snow bomb, so I'm glad I got out of the East Coast when I did.
Yeah, exactly. That's true. So we're excited about PodFest because the whole team's going to get together, and we're going to have a big announcement down there about changes that are coming. don't be fearful that something bad is going to happen. It's more of a positive announcement of what we're doing as a combined company. So everybody will have their places that they can be still. So don't be concerned. So, but it's going to be exciting. And I think a lot of people that will see what we're going to announce here will be excited about the direction that we're trying to take the company. So it's all good. So, but anyway,
are you going to broadcast from there, Rob?
That's actually a good question. I might be able to. So maybe do some live stuff down there, talk with the team, get Francesco on, maybe get get Jay on. You know, I mean, he was on the show as well, and maybe get some of the other team members to talk about this big change and this big announcement.
Let everybody know about the announcement.
So be exciting. And see, what else do we want to talk about? Oh, I think
the comment.
We should talk about Tamara Ford. What do you think?
Yeah, we got that great comment from her. Yeah. I think you should play it. It's a great comment. Glad to see that somebody's listening that we want audio comments, and hers is fantastic. So
yeah, well, and it sounds good too. She's got great audio quality. So let's play the comment that Tamara Ford wrote us. She's a podcaster. On the Spreaker platform, she does the self addiction podcast, and she has a book review and pop culture blog as well. So let's play that now, and then we can talk about it.
Hey, Rob and Alex, this is Tamara from the Shelf Addiction podcast, longtime listener, frequent commenter, first time caller. I just wanted to ask you guys, do you have an updated opinion on posting the audio of your podcast to YouTube, like pushing the audio from the Spreaker app into YouTube? I'm asking this because I was doing that. And over time, I think it was causing me to have YouTube problems. Like YouTube really started demonetizing me and other things. And I wasn't breaking the rules, right? So I don't know if you recall or not, but I did post here on one of your episodes, maybe two, that they actually suspended my channel. They didn't tell me why. They didn't tell me what happened. And I was really upset because I had lots of actual videos on there before I started podcasting. So eventually they put everything back the way it was. And they said, oh, you're not in violation. Again, never saying the whys, right? Why it was, you know, deemed that it was inappropriate. Why the whole channel was suspended. Nothing. It's just, bam, you're back. You're back in business. Carry on. So following that, I was doing some searching about audio and YouTube, and I came across this podcast that Daniel J. Lewis from the Audacity to Podcast posted back in November. The title of it is Why You Should Not Publish Audio Podcast on YouTube, and I think it's episode 332. I don't know if you guys have heard this. If you have, I would love to hear your thoughts on this and if your opinion on pushing Spreaker audio podcast to YouTube has changed, because I really do feel like it was the audio that was giving me issues with the, you know, I guess whatever automated system they have doing the checks and balances. Although again, no one has told me, so it's kind of a guess because that's the only thing that was different over time. And I think I have published maybe over 80 episodes, maybe even closer to 90 episodes before I really, really started having problems. But for me, YouTube has never been an amazing source of listeners for my podcast. So since I got my channel reactivated, I honestly just have not put a single podcast on it. I have not pushed a single additional podcast for fear that, you know, everything will be wiped away again. I'm a little nervous in doing that. I would love your feedback on this topic. Maybe if you guys can go a little in depth into it, I would really appreciate that. I want to wish you a happy new year and take care. I look forward to your response.
Well, that was a great sounding comment, Tamara. I appreciate the thoughts and the question about publishing to YouTube. It's certainly it's been a hot topic. I know, Alex, you've been pretty hot around the collar around this topic for a couple months now, I think. And I don't know. I mean, I can just give you my thoughts on it really, really quickly to kind of really kind of mirror a little bit of thoughts from others in the podcasting space as well, not just mine. But the thought is that it's still worth it to push your stuff over there. If there's issues that come up, it sounds like maybe what happened to you, Tamara, is that they maybe had somebody, some advertiser raise some concern, and it sounds like maybe they had to backpedal on it. Because it wasn't a entirely valid concern about something. I don't know the entire story about what happened there, but it sounds like you know, YouTube can be a little sensitive now. I think to a little too sensitive to content, and that may have caused them to have a knee jerk reaction to something, and then they backed off on it. That's what it sounds like. But generally, I would say that pushing content over there is just another way to capture some more audience. If you're counting on it or relying on it as a source of income or anything other than just, you know, kind of like an audience recruitment area, I think you may be disappointed at times. So it's just another place to put your content. Alex, what's your thought on it?
Well, I think she has a point that she's worried about her channel getting shut down. If she doesn't use her channel primarily for podcasting and she has other videos or she comments with it. So I can understand why, because it apparently they did shut her channel down. They actually suspended it at one point.
All of the video too. Is that what happened to her? So
that's what Tamara said. That's what she said.
Okay. It wasn't just objecting to the audio. It was across the whole thing.
Yeah, no. Apparently, they pulled her channel. They were going to shut it down, and they suspended it, where they basically, you know, turn off all the features. You can't upload videos. You can't do anything. So, unless I'm mistaken, that's what it sounds like. Now, She meant, and I'm sorry that happened to you, but she mentioned Daniel J. Lewis. And by the way, she's not the only one, folks. Yeah. I mean, I can tell you what I've gone through recently. But Daniel J. Lewis did a show apparently that she mentioned. I haven't had a chance to listen to it, but I will. Tamara, I haven't had the opportunity, but I probably already know where he's going with this. I don't know. I hate to assume, but I've heard other YouTubers and podcasters talk about this very topic. So here's my opinion on it. Someone who's gone through it. I don't know how much Daniel J. Lewis utilizes YouTube, but I utilize it a lot, and I get a lot of views from there. But recently, they've been shutting down my monetization on videos just arbitrarily, and even flagging videos saying that I'm offensive and I'm bullying and I'm all this other crap, which I'm not doing, and I fight them at every turn.
Alex, before you move on that, is it possible that she got shut down because of the video she has, or does she know for sure that it was just the audio that they shut her down on?
Well, okay, let's talk about that. What I think in her case, because I've heard her show, it's not very offensive, and in my opinion, but maybe I missed a show, maybe I didn't see something because it was already flagged or taken down. But in my opinion, and I'm just I don't know Tamara, but this is what I think probably happened, because she said suddenly, boom, they turned the switch back on and everything was there, and she didn't even get really a response, because that's how sorry about that. I jostled the mic. That's how it works. Here's the deal. They have this new algorithm that's going around and just flagging videos, just flagging them. And like a lot of
videos,
it has to,
but not audio or
in the audio, video, whatever, even audio, doesn't matter. And what they're usually going by are titles and keywords. They're not listening to your actual show. It's the title and the keywords, which will get you in trouble a lot of times. They just get flagged automatically. Then later, if people flag your video, like has been happening to me, because I have a bunch of vermin, a bunch of cretins who are after me flagging some of my videos. But I don't know if that's the case with her. Maybe it is. Maybe she's got some trolls after her. But you can fight them on each one. So what I always tell people, if you get a notification, I don't care if it's a copyright strike or if it's you're violating our terms of service, you always have to reply and fight them. Now, most of the time, you're not going to win. It's going to go down a black hole. They're not going to care. But at least you're trying, and they may reinstate it like they did with her. Because I know people who have had their entire channels not just shut down, videos gone. YouTube says they're not going to be able to retrieve them. It's gone. It's over. We're not letting you back in. And then a day or two later, everything's back and reinstated. They don't give any rhyme or reason. They don't tell them why. It's a nightmare. So I've gone through this, and I can read you a notification I just got back on December the 14th. And here's what it says, Rob. I just want other listeners other than Tamara who don't know what I'm going through, what she's going through, what happens. We received a legal complaint regarding your video. So they try to scare the hell out of you, Rob. After reviewing the following video, and the video I did was, we are living in the second Holocaust of ISIS. Now, Rob, here's the other thing. Guess when this video was? I checked. I said, why are they hitting me with this video? When did I do this? I published this on July the 2nd, 2015.
Oh, wow.
It took them 3 years to get to me, right? But so here's what it says. Listen to this, Rob. After reviewing the video, the title has been blocked from view on the following YouTube countries. Now get this list, Rob. You ready for this? Austria, Bulgaria, Switzerland, Czech Republic, Germany, France, United Kingdom, Croatia, Hungary, Israel, Italy, Lithuania, Latvia, French Polynesia, Poland, I'm huge in Poland, Romania, Slovenia, Slovakia, French Southern Territory. It goes on. I haven't even heard of some of these countries. I am now banned in these countries from one video, Rob. Okay, and then here's the best part. When you go to that video, even if you want to see it, it says the following content has been identified by the YouTube community as inappropriate or offensive, right? In response to user reports, we've disabled features, comments, sharing, suggested videos because this video, right? I mean, it's like I'm the devil. There's no cursing in the video. Meanwhile, ISIS can upload videos of chopping people's heads off, running them over with tanks. I say this is enough. I've had it, and they flag my – okay, fine. So I hate to go on a rant here, but you got me started. Then on my channel itself, my community guideline status, I have another strike for a Sandy Hook video that I did. This one says violation of YouTube's policies on bullying and harassment. I've never bullied or harassed anyone. I talked about public information with regards to the Sandy Hook and that it happened, because there's people with that have hundreds of millions of views saying Sandy Hook didn't happen. It was a hoax.
Yeah, it was all a hoax. Yeah. Yeah.
And nobody died, Rob. The children didn't die. And this whole thing. I know people from Connecticut who had children killed, period, end of story. So this isn't up for debate. So I'm the one who gets harassment and bullying strikes for trying to debunk these hoaxers. I mean, it's just YouTube has lost their mind, Tamara and Rob. They've lost their mind. So there's really no rhyme or reason anymore. So I understand her concern. If they're going to shut down your channel because of a podcast, listen, you may want to shut it off if you use your YouTube channel for other things. I understand it. I almost wish I had two separate channels. I've invested too much into YouTube.
That's what some people are recommending, Alex, is that you get a separate account for your audio.
And that's the smart thing to do.
Keep it separate really from your video stuff. So if something happens on one side or the other, it's not going to impact the other side.
And I agree with that. And in hindsight, that might have been the best idea, Rob. But once you've built up your channel, it's hard to now section off, because you know you're going to lose a lot of viewers and listeners.
I mean, you're basically starting over is what you're doing.
You really are, in a sense. And even if you tell people, hey, I got another channel, go here. I've seen other people try it. It never – you know, they might have a third, if they're lucky, of the subscribers and views, if they're lucky.
Yeah, so it takes years to build that community up, right?
It really does. I mean, it took me forever just to get the, 5,000 or 6,000 subscribers I have now. And now I'm getting flagged and things like this. So, oh, by the way, this is another thing I should mention. It doesn't just happen to me or you. It happens to people I've interviewed. So, for example, the guy that I interviewed for the Sandy Hook video, they shut down his channel. What they did to Tamara, they basically did to this guy. His name's C.W. Wade. You can't even find him anymore. They shut down his channel. I was on Twitter last month saying, hey, man, what happened? They're like, nothing. I can't get it back. They've just shut it down. These trolls flagged my videos, and they flagged a bunch of videos saying it was offensive, and they shut them down. They basically shut down his channel. See, I fight everything, and that's what I would say to her. If she really wants to keep her channel up and not create another one, when you get these notifications, don't ignore them. Fight them. Respond to them. Because if somebody does say that one of your videos is offensive and they claim all this stuff, or even a copyright claim, and the YouTube people go and check it out and they find out that the person's making false claims, they'll kick them off YouTube.
So you think can't just go make happening fake. Here, Alex, is that people are basically using the YouTube platform to report objectionable content.
They're abusing. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Rob. And I know for a fact, because I have a group coming after me, the Sandy Hook hoaxers, and they're totally unsuccessful. What I've done is I've made that actual, any users can do it too, in the public domain. So now they've made it worse, because I'm allowing anyone to upload it and put it anywhere they want, right? So they thought they were going to shut it down on YouTube. Now I'm just going to put it out in the public domain. Radio stations can play it. I don't care. They made it a bigger deal than it ever was. If they wouldn't have tried to shut it down, I wouldn't have cared, right? But it got thousands of views, so it scared a lot of people. Oops, it scared a lot of people.
Yeah.
Anyway, so it's a problem, Rob, and she's now experiencing it. I've been talking about this for a year and a half, and it's finally hitting our listeners as well. It really is. It's a pain. YouTube has got to figure something out, because they're starting to lose content creators, because we're getting sick of it. We're getting sick of it.
Well, and they're probably using an algorithm to search for stuff, and it's keyword sensitive. And then if there's somebody that doesn't like that's on the opposite side of your issue, goes in there and does a report, basically reporting you as kind of hateful content or wrong content. I've had that happen to me on Spreaker, where there are shows on the Spreaker platform that users will tweet about and say, well, Spreaker's doing this, has this show on this platform, and they're because they're there, they're promoting some, one side or the other of an issue, right? And we'll start bashing the platform because we're hosting a content piece that they don't agree with, So we're getting into this. This is just an extreme reaction to the divisions that exist online right now between people and how aggressive they might be in pursuing their particular agenda against others. And I think Google is getting caught up in this.
And it's just going to get worse because if they allow people to vindictively hit people with strikes, fraudulently, outright lying, saying that I've been harassed or defamed or slandered, which, by the way, is a very high standard. In the state of California where I live, there's slap laws. So if somebody does say, oh, Alex Exum defamed me and everything, I want that video shut down, which, by the way, I monetize, so they're actually hurting my livelihood, they can get hit with paying my legal fees. Because there are slap laws in California. So if you come after me, I'm going to come back after you. And that's the way you have to handle this stuff. And people have talked about suing, class action type lawsuits against YouTube for violating the terms of service because they're violating their own terms of services in some instances. And there's no recourse, Rob. So like this one Sandy Hook one that I'm talking about, not the other one, but this one, it says – acknowledged on November the 25th, 2017, right? My appeal was rejected. They don't tell you why. And then this expires February 22nd, 2018. So am I supposed to believe February the 22nd? It expires and then what? I don't have a strike, but you can't see the video. What good does that do? You get three strikes, you're out. I now have a strike. If I get two more strikes, they can shut down my whole channel.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. That's just it's a reflection of the times that we're living in now of people and I
thought I was living in America, Rob. I thought we had freedom of speech.
Well, you are, but what's happening is people's extreme positions is going even further in extremes, and people are getting caught up in these divisions that are starting to get almost getting to a point where they're almost getting violent. I think there's definitely vindictiveness, and people just have a hard time, I guess, holding back, you know, on taking things to a whole nother level, you know.
You're right. Yeah. And it's like I said, it's going to get worse. And if YouTube and other platforms allow just the people who don't like your opinion to censure you, the kind of stuff that happened at Berkeley, I keep saying this, freedom of speech started at Berkeley and it will die at Berkeley because right? Because that was like, that was that is where it all started. Really. I mean, this is where you had people willing to take a bullet in a protest for freedom of speech. Now they're shutting it down right and left. And it's the same liberals. It's so insane that I think it's going to get worse before it gets better. And you're going to have platforms like this where there won't be freedom of speech. Someone will deem what they don't like it, like the ISIS video I did, right? It was obviously someone who had an axe to grind about ISIS or Islam. I don't know how anyone could be for ISIS, but it was probably about, you know, Islam or Sandy Hook hoaxers. These people who are in their basement saying it didn't happen, nobody died, harassing the families. And they just say, well, I don't like what Alex Exum said, because I make money off the videos that the millions of views I get on my videos, that it's a hoax. They're making money off this crap. So they don't like what I'm saying, so they want to shut it down so people don't go, wait a second, I thought it was fake. No. It happened. So they come after me anyway.
And so. Now it's these platforms are being pressured to take down what's considered to be deemed as fake news, right? So
yes.
I know if you look at – I mean, this issue is happening on Facebook too. So – this is not something that's new. It's indicative of where we're happening. I mean, what's happening geopolitically as well as culturally, that there's manipulation that's happening right now. The internet has opened a Pandora's box, and has allowed people to abuse information. And I think that's what's happening more and more. It's being used as a weapon. Essentially, information now is being weaponized.
And you're right. They draw it like a gun. They draw it like a gun. And the next thing you know, it's going to be like, you know, this whole net neutrality that has been in the But it's gonna get to the point where you're gonna have safe parts of the internet, right? Yep. It's gonna be like the dark web and the light web. I don't even know what you want to call it. But there'll be places you can go and other places you can't go. So if you don't want to hear this kind of speech that's a little edgy, right, you're gonna have to go to the safe internet. Like that'll be for the children, right?
And the nuns. You know, maybe we're gonna have a internet that's all, you know, right wing, and an internet that's all left wing. Who knows? You know?
Oh God! And then it'll just be an echo chamber of all of our same ideas, just rattling around.
Well, you know, I mean, the recent changes I've seen to Facebook indicate that they are pigeonholing us into a specific topic area. I noticed it here recently, and it appears that maybe it's backing off a little bit now. But there was a period of time when all I was seeing was posts about podcasting. That's it.
Well, you think that's because of the algorithm, just to make sure that that's what you see because you're interested. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah,
so they're manipulating you to see. Yeah, what's only.
They're basically deciding based on my profile that all I really want to see is posts about podcasting, and they're excluding everything else, right? And so that's the power that these platforms have, is to focus our. What makes it through their filters, right? That's a serious risk to our democracy and free thinking culture that has built this country. So anyway, we've kind of gone off the rails a little bit on this one.
Okay, yeah.
But I think it's definitely a topic that, as a content creator now, you have to wrestle with these topics. If you're a podcaster and you're doing politics or you're doing any kind of, you know, geopolitical type of thing, extreme topics can garner audience. And that's one of the things that is such a struggle, is that, you know, taking a hard position on stuff can build an audience.
It's worked for me.
Yeah. But it also breeds discontent on the other side too, right?
So, it's happened to me. Yeah.
So that's the story. We're sticking to it. No, Tamara, thank you so much for taking the time to record an audio comment, encode it, send it to us via email. And if anybody else would like to do that, we would be happy to talk about your audio comment too. So please send it to me, rob@spreaker.com, and we'll play it on the next episode. It'd be fantastic. I know Alex will be really happy with you.
I love it. Love it.
But I think we're going to get out of here, Alex. I think we've talked to our audience.
Thanks, Rob. Good show.
Enough. I appreciate it. And welcome to 2018. And this is going to be a fantastic year. I'm really excited for what's happening with Spreaker and what's happening, with podcasting. It's an exciting time for podcasting as a medium. So let's make the most of it this year. So thank you so much for listening. This is Spreaker Live Show. We air this show live every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern. So come back and check us out next Wednesday at that time. And we will be happy to have you join us. Thank you so much. Alex, take care and have a great
week.
Thanks,
Rob. Bye.